Welcome to the new Cyber Frontier, bringing you the latest news on the local Colorado economy and initiatives that focus on the development of cybersecurity economics. You don't have to be a computer or cybersecurity expert to get plugged in. Your host, Chris Gorog, brings it straightforward, asks the tough questions, and brings the cyber world to a level of understanding for everyone. Chris is personable and opens up with our guests on the issues we all would like to see addressed. You can find us on the web at www.newcyberfrontier.com. Now join our host as he introduces the topic for today's New Cyber Frontier.
So welcome to today's episode of New Cyber Frontier. We have our monthly DC update with our correspondent Chuck Brooks, who is on the line. Welcome today, Chuck. How are you doing?
Thank you for having me. It's great to be back.
Yeah, it's good to have you. And you know, so many things have happened. Last time we talked, we had two big ransomware attacks. Can you give us some, what's your take on these things going on?
Well, you know, ransomware has been around for a while, but it's now becoming more of a trend. And the reason is it's effective. FBI estimated that was over $1 billion in ransomware, whether it be in Bitcoin or in other forms of payment paid in the last year. So it's hard to track because a lot of that was individuals. But what you saw recently was first the WannaCry attack. And that was an attack. It was basically taking advantage of unpatched computers, and it spread to over 100 countries. It hit a lot of low-hanging fruit, kind of like hospitals and universities that have sort of disparate networks and able to coordinate security for them. So it did a lot of damage, and it was a wake-up call. And just recently, there was another one called Petya, which is more. Some people are calling it cyber warfare because it's really directed, some people think, by a foreign country against Ukraine, but it sort of spread. It even spread to maybe that foreign country that directed it. But the reality is that ransomware is sort of a preferred means of attacking, mainly because it brings money. And anytime you can extort and gain financial gain from it, it's appealing not just to countries, but more likely to criminal elements. Mm-hmm. So it's been a real problem, and of course, a lot of it starts with phishing and spear phishing, and it's almost impossible to stop that. The best of us has opened up the wrong kind of attachment, and it's easy as that. And I think one of the things that it's looked at right now is okay, if you're working in an IT shop, make sure that you have everything patched. If you're a consumer, make sure you have good cyber hygiene, that you update your antivirus, and that you don't open up any attachments that may not be from someone you know. And in some cases, they actually may look like they're from someone you know. So you have to be very careful. I think one of the things that has changed is that the old time, phishing attacks where you have the misspelled words and the logos that look a little strange are not there anymore. Everything can be mimicked and stolen and used. And so I think it's a huge problem.
Hmm. Do you have any financial information about how many people paid that ransom for the WannaCry or the Petya? Or have you seen any stats like that globally or anything?
I don't think a lot was paid for the WannaCry because they were able to stop it by accident when an individual found a remedy for it. There was probably some slow-level stuff. Most of the networks didn't get to that. I think the latter one, Petya, was more of an attack than a ransomware attack, cyber attack. I think they just wanted to do damage to Ukraine. But, I don't have the statistics, but it is a problem. Like I said, because as we go to a digital currency, it's going to be easier for these people basically to do this because they just transfer it to this account or, you don't get your files back. And so, but it would be interesting to check in to see if there is any stats out on that. I'm sure there is somewhere published somewhere.
Yeah, probably a lot of people were embarrassed if they paid. They wouldn't put it out publicly anyway, so just get it over with and done.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And the other thing I think it comes along with ransomware is identity theft. And I just wrote an article recently about that. An alien vault called the Scourge of Identity Theft. And it's really becoming a prevailing problem because just about anyone and everyone I've known has been the subject of some sort of breach, whether it be a credit card stolen and used in their name, or in some cases where identities were totally stolen. And I had personal experience with that. I've had my Facebook and my LinkedIn mimicked, and my Yahoo stolen several times, and my and Twitter. So it's not that difficult to do. You know, it's easy to do. It's a question of why would they want to do it? And so, you know, there's a question of exposure. Do you want to make sure everyone knows you so they can't be you, or do you want to basically, you know, leave the grid and you know, live behind a shield? So there's probably somewhere in between what's the best means of protecting yourself. But I think ransomware and identity theft are two things that we got to watch for.
Yeah. Well, let's take a break right now, hear from our sponsors. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
All right, welcome back. We're talking to Chuck Brooks on our monthly DC Cyber Updates. Chuck, give us a recap of what's going on in cyber in DC.
Well, several things have happened officially. One has been the presidential order on cybersecurity came out finally. You know, it's really not all that different from the last administration, largely because of the same groups of, and I think in a good way, have influenced it. A lot of the institutional associations that are have expertise in the private sector on cybersecurity issues influence the basic elements of it. What is a little different is that the Trump administration is now holding federal agencies accountable as individual agencies. So it used to be more that the DHS, you know, would help take care of all the civilian issues and would go under one umbrella. They still do that with Einstein and monitor and intercept and mitigate threats. But now it's come to the point where each agency, their cybersecurity department, is responsible for mitigation of threats and monitoring of threats also, and that's going to affect their capability to function as an agency. They're being basically held accountable, which is a good thing because sometimes it's too late when DHS gets hold of it. Mm-hmm. So that's an interesting part. And I think also with the presidential order, of course, more involvement with the private sector, which I think is always a good thing. And then there's also another development that came out of NIST. There was a revised framework for Internet of Things. And that's a good sign, too, because you're seeing now that the transition to a digital economy is really expanded. Now it's becoming, you know, they're talking about maybe 22 billion connected devices by 2020.
Wow.
So Internet of Things is really become a functional part of our economy now and particularly in the future. But it also, you know, poses a huge risk because of the exponential connectivity. If you look at all those devices and openings and in software and ads, and so how do you protect such a large attack surface space? And those are things that NIST is looking to, and standards that are probably the first thing to look at. And also, of course, you have different manufacturers of different devices, equipment, and they don't always work on the same systems, and they're not certainly updated for security. So just like the Internet of Things is not built for security, and it's going to take a lot to cure it.
Mm-hmm. You know, we looked into the presidential directive. I had some local people kind of pull that apart. We had a show on that. And you know what I wanted your opinion on this, but it seemed like there was a kick in the can down the road. The presidential directive was go out, take a year, literally, if you added the times up, it's a year to come back with a report on what the president should recommend or should do. It just seems like we're going through that same pattern of, oh, let's go evaluate and come back and decide what to do later.
Well, it is a repetitive pattern. I think there's more to it this time, though. I think there's a deeper involvement from the DoD community than there was before, and they're leading some of this effort. So So they're looking at, obviously a vulnerability assessment. And they're also looking at restructuring things differently. So and that was promised in the campaign. Mm-hmm. You know, that I saw us bring in, Mayor Giuliani's group, too, from the outside, so which is now also being closely intertwined with the administration. So it's a different start. So I think, it takes about, we were talking earlier about, appointments. It takes so long to get moving when you bring in a new government, a new administration, that it will probably take a year to basically get another, evaluating what you need to do, even though a lot of the road work has already been done.
Yeah, and you were saying a lot of the appointments you think are kind of late, or they've been still evaluating who should be to put in for different positions. What types of changes are you seeing that are good or making an effect already?
Well, I think it's sort of an interesting, I think, just like they're looking at cybersecurity from top down, they're looking at the operations of the government from top down. And they want to see where the efficiencies and deficiencies lie. So a lot of these appointments are value, whether they're keeping the positions or not. And that's sort of a different kind of approach, because it's usually been more of a revolving door with past administrations, because they've already been in government and they know who's done what and what's where. And they're looking at, I think, a different sort of a business approach. The other problem is because of all the partisan haggling, a lot of stuff has got slowed down, which is the major confirmations, first of some of the secretaries, now the number twos and threes, and some of these people are not even confirmed yet. So I think that's really held back on some of the appointments, particularly in agencies like DOE and even DHS and others, where they haven't had the ability to put their people in yet.
Do you think some of the political discord that you see the president in the news, a lot of the turmoil with the battle kind of with the press, is causing delays here?
I don't think it's the delay. I think it was, the delays, I don't think it's caused by the press. I mean, some of it, I think, because the presidential personnel system operates by itself. But they've also put in some more rigid restrictions and a lot of things with just disclosure and transparency of past business and who you've dealt with, which is a deterrent to a lot of people that have done very well in the private sector if they don't want to disclose it. Mm-hmm. And also the fact that they didn't allow lobbyists to play a role or go in initially with this transition, which held back because they have more of the expertise and the real experience. I think the haggling is more deliberate. I think, the other side definitely wanted to hold up appointments, and they want to be, basically as rigorous as they can in trying to stop them. So that goes with the territory. I just don't think they had the experience of how to deal with that, whereas other administrations have.
Yeah, it seemed like, though, when the president was first elected, there was more of a unified front towards getting stuff done, and that's kind of mired down a little bit.
It gets mired down, and it gets mired down in politics, and they're already looking at the next elections, and that's what's happened. It's moved into the House election cycle already, and so everything is rhetorical. There are things getting done, I think, in cybersecurity. I mean, there was a bipartisan legislation passed recently in the House. It's a public-private sector bill again. Another one that's a little bit more descriptive than it had in the past, and that sort of thing. So I think cyber is not a partisan issue.
So what did that bill do? I mean, what can we look forward from that bill?
It codifies a lot of the cooperation, and also mandates, keeping standards for incentives. So I think you'll see some of that. It's not in its final form yet, because I guess it's got to go to the Senate, but it looks like it will pass the Senate, so at least I'm saying it now, I never know. But I think, it's basically, again, the public-private sector cooperation, because the private sector owns most of its critical infrastructure, and can't operate the government without having cooperation and the expertise and the lessons learned from the private sector. And there's also other huge areas that, it's trying to fill. But yeah, this is sort of a follow-on to some of the earlier legislation.
We'll be right back with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Over 3 million data breaches happen every single day. That's over 2,000 records being compromised every minute. So often, we focus on securing web data access. But what if the attackers are already inside, having gained direct access to your storage through data management software? When it comes to communications that go directly into your storage devices, make SNIA your first line of protection. SNIA's conformance testing limits outdated communications that are known to be used by attackers. It works continuously behind the background to make sure your storage is protected. To find out if your data is truly secure, visit our website at www.snia.org/cybertest.
Now, I saw a piece you wrote called, well, I think, Cybersecurity for the C-Suite. So that's a little bit different direction than being, you know, in the middle of the government here, more private sector. But tell us about what you're finding out in that area.
Yeah, and I've been at both sides. So I'm finding out, and it was confirmed by a lot of surveys, that most corporate boards, particularly the C-suite, have little knowledge of cybersecurity or expertise. And it's become problematic now with all these large breaches, and they're paying the price at the bottom line. And mm-hmm. So I wrote a quick article basically calling a cheat sheet for C-suite. And basically the crux of it is that cybersecurity is risk management, and it requires, you know, having a vigilance and encompassing educating employees, identifying gaps, assessing vulnerabilities, mitigating threats, and resilience. And my recommendations were that you can't rely solely from what you have internally, that you should bring in outside expertise, you know, because it's a responsibility to your shareholders, and that you need effective communication between the CISO, CTO, and CIO in any organization. So it's basically establishing a framework to how to communicate and, you know, basically bringing it up to level to other roles for P&L, whether it be sales, marketing, and cybersecurity is integral to any function in any corporation, whether it be a small business or a large corporation. So it's got a lot of feedback, and it's been positive. And mm-hmm. I think you'll see more and more trend with boards hiring outside experts, or at least bringing up some of their CTOs and CIOs to be part of the discussion.
Yeah, that's one of the efforts here of the National Cybersecurity Center in Colorado, is to train the C-suite and elected officials. So they have every quarter, I believe, training on that. Anybody listening that has interest there, contact the NCC. And I'm not affiliate. I'm on the board for them, but you know, they're not having me promote that in any way. It's just something that I know that is ongoing, that has been effective. But what are you hearing is the crux of that the issue? Why is there such a gap there?
Well, I think for the most part, companies used to just feel, oh, we're going to pass it on to consumers. You know, it's going to be a loss. But now I think what's happened is because of the huge amount with all these from, you know, Sony to Home Depot to Anthem and others, that, you know, that this is significant. You know, it's really hurting the perception and the public stock. So I think they've had to react. And, you know, and they've had to react in a big way. The other fact is that, you know, the sophistication of the attackers has grown so much in the last few years because of technology and access to vulnerabilities sets from the dark web, that the speed of vulnerability is being exploited so quickly now that mm-hmm. they need people. They need expertise. They need to deal with it. And also, I think the other big overriding thing is that the economy is changing. You know, we are moving to a digital economy. There's artificial intelligence, machine intelligence, and automation everywhere. And things are changing. And if you're not caught up in the emerging technology arena, you're going to be a dinosaur as a company. And cybersecurity is sort of the glue that holds all those elements together.
Mm-hmm. So do you think the C-suite is often seasoned? We'll just say they've been around for a while. They know the company pretty well. Traditionally, and as an educator, I see this as well, you know, that level of people haven't been entertaining or looking for cybersecurity education. They've relied on, you know, hiring people that can do that. Just give me somebody to take care of that. Do you see that mentality is changing, that they're actually saying, you know, wait a minute, I got to take that. This is under my wing now, and I have to understand it. Is that change happening?
I think it's change is happening in some companies, but certainly not all of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some are set in their ways, but I think, you know, particularly the 43% of them that have been breached have had a wake up call.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can't rely on your IT shop, and you can't rely, you need to really have outside expertise, and you really need to invest in resources and people and processes and technologies. And I think they're just coming around to it. They're you know, reluctant to do it because it is spending and is not looked at as revenue.
Yeah.
And so it's a revenue generating thing. But the real issue is, okay, how much return on investment is it preventing the loss of revenue? And that's why you have to look at it as a C-suite, you know, because this is the age where you could go completely under if you have your personal records breached and your company IP stolen. So,
yeah.
You know, that has a value.
And at the same time, I think making it a relating it to the money aspect, I keep hearing you talking about, and that's one thing. I took the boardroom training at the NCC a couple cycles ago, and I heard a lot of that really training geared towards helping understand the revenue aspects of what the cybersecurity, both the problems and the opportunities are out there.
Yes, exactly it. I mean, it's exactly it. I mean, companies are around usually to make money and take care of their shareholders, and you have to tie it into the bottom line.
And it's a little bit different approach. I mean, most, to date, most training has been about, you know, how do you do all the technical aspects? And even at the aspect, like in the university situation, we're looking at training the students to understand the business aspects, because traditionally cybersecurity students were taught the technical aspects. And that has to change from that end as too, which is something that we're definitely including in the areas I work in.
Yeah, it's really a holistic approach. I think it's really not being just a pure technical person. It's really having an understanding of the policy, the interaction of people, mm-hmm. you know, the events that are taking place around you. You know, cybersecurity is a really, it's a dynamic field. It's an interesting field, and it should attract more people because it touches everything.
Yeah.
And I think you cannot sort of isolate yourself from just being a coder, but you need to really look at the implications and also evaluate, you know, like I said, the artificial intelligence and automation technologies coming on board now.
So what do you think about AI? Is it going to take over the world?
Well, some scientists think so, but, I think we're a long way off from that, but I think it's going to certainly impact how we do business, and it already is, and you see that, you know, Apple, Google, Microsoft are investing heavily in buying AI firms.
Yeah.
So there's something to it, and it makes sense. And you're basically if you're looking at predictive analytics and artificial intelligence, it's probably going to play a major role in sort of monitoring the horizon of cybersecurity attacks and countering them, because it may be AI against AI eventually.
You know, I've heard for years that an algorithm will come along, or a capability will come along, to solve cybersecurity problems. That I've heard presented for the last 5 or 6 years of the analytics, the taking the mass amounts of information that we're gathering and trying to make some sense out of it, and now AI is like suited or basically said, this will solve that problem. Do you sign on to that mindset, that thought process?
No, I mean I can see self-healing networks and things like that, but I mean there's still an element of people that are going to need to be involved in. There's so many different, vulnerability aspects to cybersecurity that involve, the physical as well as digital.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's never going to be entirely artificial intelligence.
Yeah.
And and incident response will always require people too. So it may be in the if you're looking in the distant future, which But I may be wrong. Things are moving so quickly. Who knows?
But I think you hit it right when you said AI against AI, because a famous quote from Bruce Schreiner says, "All technology is morally agnostic," meaning that no matter what comes out, it's going to be used equally as much for good and bad. So in the future, have we just made another demon? Have we made our own battle to go back and forth with a spawn of an artificial intelligence?
Well, that's the question that's being asked, and how do you control it? Will it start replicating itself? There's a lot to think about there, but
yeah.
It's already here, and they're already using it.
Yeah, there's no stopping it now. It's already here.
Just started here, so I don't think we can control it anymore, because, like I say, it's whoever has the best artificial intelligence capabilities is going to want to do more, and whoever doesn't have it needs it to be able to protect themselves. So
yeah,
it's just a spiral.
All right. So anything kind of wrapping up here, any other things you want to get out about things going on in, either in your personal or your firm or around the D.C. area that you wanted to get a notification out to?
No, I mean, I read several articles recently, one today at NextGov on blockchain this week, and then also another, an alien vault that I mentioned on identity theft, and then an interview in Performance Console on Homeland Security that was also published this week. So I've been busy writing and also doing a variety of speeches, but, it never stops because the issues keep coming up.
I hear you. If you send me links to those, I'll try and include them in the write-up as well. So.
Okay, I appreciate that.
All right, Chuck. Well, thanks a lot. Thanks for joining today, and you have a great weekend.
You too. Take care.
Bye.
We hope you have enjoyed this episode of New Cyber Frontier. Remember to get involved. Often we think that someone else will handle privacy and security in the virtual world, but you are the only one truly in command of your virtual fate. Join our mailing list so we can keep you informed of breaking news and new releases. If you have an idea, if you have a question that you would like to hear answered, or if you want to get involved with our efforts, reach out to us at newcyberfrontier.com. We also encourage you to visit our sponsors' links, as they are the ones that really make this show possible. I want to thank each of you for supporting the show, and we look forward to seeing you back for the next episode of New Cyber Frontier.